Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the rural area of outer D.C. this is the rural session, and our paper, I think, is assigned here a little oddly because it isn't particularly about rural, but nonetheless, we believe rural, and we think it's a little ironic that it's put it not in the in the main venue, the convention center, nor even the hotel across the street. It's the most remote hotel. But not satisfied with that, they have to put us on the bottom floor. But feeling that was insufficient, they put us at the end of the line. And then they put Carolyn Clancy next door getting an award. Now, how marginalized can you be? I mean, we should have a rural sit-in, I think. In any event, I'm glad to be here representing our team, and I'll introduce them in a minute. But we have a past president, and notwithstanding our remote placement, a past president of APHA, Bill Keck, is with us. I want to recognize him, an old friend. I think he has an introduction to make as well.
Well, thank you, Dr. Mullen. Mike also knows that we have a distinguished Cuban physician in the audience. Dr. Pedro Ordinez is currently now living in the Washington area. He's a Cuban delegate for the Pan American Health Organization, was previously director of the hospital in Cienfuegos, I believe. So glad to have you here as well.
Thank you for coming. You do rural too. Good. Well, I think since this represents actually also a high point for APHA taking a stand for public health, since our paper is about medical education unabashedly, and they decided it was interesting enough to include, but only once again at the margins. They weren't going to put us in the main house. Public health stood up and said, "This is medical, okay, but you're over there." Ours is indeed the social mission of medical education, and it represents work that we have done and work that we're doing, and I say we have a bit of a team, I think these two studies, one completed, one in process, represent what we hope will be a continuum of work in the area of both defining, publicizing, and promoting the issue of social mission, which is not always thought of in the same sentence as medicine or medical education. We believe firmly it should be. I don't think that distorts our scholarship. We think evidence ought to be brought to the field, but it is a real issue. Which is my... So left click, right click. Okay. Got it. I don't have anything to disclose. These are my colleagues in both of these undertakings. With us, Gretchen Kolsky is a co-presenter on a later paper. You got marginalized times two. And Sarah Diamond, who is sitting in the back. Sarah is a research assistant at GW with me now, working on our second of our studies. Gretchen is now with ASTO, and she once pointed out that the work done on this was when she's at GW. It's not ASTO associated. So the special role of medicine, and this we could spend a lot of time on, this is not... by any means a comprehensive or definitive set of characteristics, but there is, in all his studies actually, the one most telling point or issue is that there are institutions, including medical schools, that do research. There are institutions, including medical schools, that do patient care. But only a medical school can produce a physician in our system as structured. Nurses are making a run at that with a doctor of nursing practice, but for the moment, at least medicine or medical education and the practice of medicine is currently defined. Medical schools are the only institution that can take a person off the street and graduate them with the ability to obtain a license to practice medicine. That is a distinct privilege and distinct responsibility on the part of medicine. Malika Fair has joined us, a co-worker on the current study. Welcome, Malika. But the notion of having the privilege to practice institutionally, licensure, the personal privilege to enter into people's lives somewhat indiscriminately, bring a special role to the physician that invites the notion of accountability. If we then produce physicians, people, the society ought to have a fair shot at such benefit as physicians bring. And that is the matter of being accountable to the society as a whole. The term social mission has been used occasionally over the years in publications and public discourse. If you actually search the literature, it's being used with greater frequency or variance, social accountability, social responsibility. And happily, I think it is getting more attention. The first of our two studies published a little over a year ago brought a good deal of attention and controversy, which we think is important for getting a field established. But it all focuses around the issue of fairness, the issue that if we are investing as a society, if we are taking some of our best and brightest and training them as physicians, we should work on training them in such a way and deploying them in such a way that there is some sense of equitability in terms of both the opportunity to be a physician and then the opportunity of the society to benefit from the skills and knowledge that that physician acquires. And this involves a definition of community or society that's local, national, and indeed global. So these might be defined as fairly lofty concepts. I think not. I think when somebody calls them lofty, which they've been called, that's a bit marginalizing the idea and saying I really don't want to deal with it. I would say these are core issues for medicine and for medical education. So we decided to take on the what we consider equity challenges in medical education and try to bring some outcome measurement to the field. And the field or the issues that we chose to look at were primary care, underserved communities, and underrepresented minorities. That is, as physicians graduate, do postgraduate training, and enter into practice, where do they end up? Not where do they say they want to go in medical school, or which residency they take, but where indeed do they practice? And we picked roughly 10 years out. And these three issues, which arguably are not the only issues, but these are longstanding challenges to medicine in any country. Most countries outside of Cuba, which has been very effective, to my knowledge, in deploying physicians essentially coast to coast in quite an equitable manner, most liberal countries and most non-liberal countries, in fact, physicians cluster in urban areas. They tend to go where the well-to-do are, and they tend to go where technology is. So this question of who goes into primary care, who goes to underserved areas, and are we effective in bringing underrepresented people into the system are major metrics of a medical school's accomplishment in terms of medical education. Now, medical educators will quickly say, well and good, but we don't employ them. We don't pay them. We're not the system. You can't hold us accountable. Well, yes and no. It's true that education is a launch pad, and it's true that the system and payment incentives are powerful. And it's true, I believe, that you can't fix the system by rejiggering the education system and people will go out and work against their own interest in a system that doesn't promote this. That said, nobody has more power over the outcome of a physician's career than medical school. They, first of all, select who is going to be a physician. They have complete control over who enters the pipeline. They have folks under their roof in the States for 4 years at least. They role model at a fairly formative age, types of medical practice, values in medicine. One could go on, but you get the point. While nobody owns a physician's career, other than perhaps the physician, medical school has as clean a shot at it as anybody. So to walk away and say we really don't have any role here, it would be untrue. So we undertook to look at these three measures that I've described. We did a 10-year look back, basically, because we needed people to be all the way out on the other side, having done postgraduate training, having done any national obligations, National Service Corps, military they might have had. So it was 99-2001 groups we looked at. We obtained, we did standardized values for each of the three measures, and we measured each along its own axis and then summed them as a standardized score. We also looked at particular groupings within medicine, within medical schools, we look by geographic region, roughly northeast, southeast, northwest, southwest. We looked at the size of the community from a highly rural frontier on to urban. We looked at private versus public school. We looked at NIH support by level of NIH funding. We looked at allopathic versus osteopathic. And there is a classification within the AAMC of community-based schools. There are, I believe, 18 of them, and most were founded in the 70s. And speaking community-based, we looked at those at a group. And we use weighted average scores in each classification. This was the top 10 in terms of positive outcome. I won't tarry on the statistics. We can talk more about it afterward if you'd like. But the first startling finding is that the three African-American, or HBCUs, Morehouse, Meharry, and Howard, came out 1, 2, and 3. And I was actually, I remember when the data came rolling out, and I looked at it, whoa, we didn't expect that. It doesn't take a lot of reflection. They each have a student body that is 70 to 80% African-American, and a little higher if you take all minorities. So they're well ahead of about 30% is the next most minority-dedicated school. So our next instinct was, well, this is a different sort of animal. We should probably set them aside and look at the rest of the schools. And then we thought over time, well, no. I mean, this is, we have defined the social mission parameters. They are very dedicated and very successful in this particular parameter. They also do quite well in the other two, primary care and shortage areas, and are respectably and easily defensibly out front of the pack. So we left that there. You will note then the schools that come up are what you might call not well-known brands. I mean, these are public schools, all of them, and most of the first 30 schools outside of these three, which interestingly, the African-American schools are all private. But these are low-prestige schools by standard measurements, but they're pulling the freight in terms of these measures of outcome. And if you go to the bottom of the list, the 141, Vanderbilt comes out dead last, and you'll note many more well-known schools. And if you go to the 120 to 130 grouping, you'll find most of the rest of your Ivies and your well-known research universities. So this, in many senses, we did not expect it would be as dramatic a inversion of the usual prestige ranking of schools as we found. But there's a lot to be learned in this, and there's the middle group. We couldn't print them all out, but I'll be happy to chat if people want to know where they sit. So the findings really were the success of the HBCUs, as I mentioned, that public schools, by and large, did better than private schools. And again, not an eye-popper. These folks have a board of directors called the state legislature, and they do worry about such things as, do we have doctors in our rural and remote areas? Do we have doctors of color representing our population and the like? And they perform better. The question is, why do the private schools not do as well? And, of course, they have defined other missions, and that is a set of issues worth, I think, considering what is the comparative importance of sundry missions. But certainly they have rated these missions lower by their aggregate performance. NIH support is, by and large, inverse to social mission score, with a number of exceptions. There are four or five schools that are top quartile social mission and top quartile NIH funding. And those are institutions to be studied. They're all public, big, University of Washington, University of Minnesota, University of Colorado, and Alabama. I think we're four of them. And there's a bit of a story with each. But it does suggest you can do well in terms of having a robust research enterprise and also turn out substantial graduates that are responsive to social mission issues. The Northeast of the United States, which is heavy in private schools, it's heavy in research-intensive schools, generally rates poorly on both primary care and shortage area. They do a little better on minorities. And medical schools in less urban areas particularly do better. Osteopathic graduates do better in regard to primary care and distribution and not as well in minorities. So the private school disadvantage I've talked about. The New York syndrome, we were asked about the variety of, we got a lot of news coverage. I mean, rankings, if you want to do a research study, you know, work your findings into rankings and publish them, and you will get a lot of newspapers calling you. That's the axiom here. There's a story in every community, the press gets it, so we got a lot of traction. New York Times called and said an eager reporter, Anamoda Hartakolis is her name, you may have read her, she's a regular byline in Health. She said, I want to do the story, my editor isn't convinced there's anything new here. What's new here for New York? What's a hook for New York? I don't know, let me think about it. And then I looked at the study. I said, well, let's see how New York schools do. New York's the largest medical school state, 13, I believe. And I looked at what the rankings were. The highest ranking was Mount Sinai at 88, which is lower part of the third quartile. So 13 schools, and nobody's higher than lower part of the third quartile. Whoa, do we have a New York hook? So I called her back, and she said, oh, I get it. And she said, why? I said, I really don't know. I trained in New York. I can give you some theories, but this, you ought to go out and interview people and ask them. She said, terrific. So she calls back a little later, sends me an email. Sorry, my editor didn't buy it. Now, what particular site is his bread buttered on? I mean, this was, a very important story about medical education in New York State, and they didn't take it, which suggests they're part of what I call the Turing syndrome. An interesting finding in the way that I think these kinds of findings could be used by legislators and others. And the double winners I've talked about that do well in both research as well as the others. Controversies, and there were a lot. 10-year lag, people said, well, that's the way we were then. It's not the way we are now. And that's fair. Everybody, of course, pointed out they're better now. It's the Lake Wobegon. You know, like we're all above average. But nonetheless, that is a a problem. We've discussed how if we redid it, could we cut it? That's a challenge. Not sure we could do a great job. Public hospitals, one dean of a public medical school, or private medical school, did all its training in a public hospital, said, and they came out, you know, in the 120s. So it was irate. She said, you don't give us credit for training in a public hospital. I said, well, we're not giving credit for anything other than what the graduates do, so that's not part of the study. And then we talked more. I said, well, let's think about it. It seems to me this is actually a problem for you, not for me. If you're training everybody in a public hospital, and yet they don't go into primary care, they don't go to shortage areas, and they don't, you know, you don't have an outstanding number of minorities, what's wrong with this picture? It isn't the study. It's somehow whatever they're learning at that public hospital in the hands of your faculty, or how you're selecting them is not promoting folks. So I think there's more. A number of people said we aren't measuring this or that, and our only measurement for this was outcomes. Research came up. People were, right from the review process, before it ever hit the printed page, people said, well, don't take into account research. That's social mission. And we've talked a lot about this. I've thought a lot about it. I haven't written about it yet, though plan to. I think, obviously, research is in our common interest. We want, you know, innovation. We want better modalities of healthcare. And this will be in public health, indeed. But this is what I would choose to call a public good, different than a social good or a social mission. Social mission is about equity. It's about catch-up. It's about leveling or maintaining or trying to maintain a level playing field. Research innovations are good. We're for them, but they do not speak to the issues of disequity. They speak to the issues of technical proficiency. And while we're for that, it's a different mission. Some people accept that. I will tell you some don't. Is it a respectable mission for medical school? Absolutely. But it's not social mission. And then quality concerns, another interesting and difficult argument. Well, all right, you say all that, but how do I know that a doctor from, you know, such and such state university is as good as Harvard? I mean, you got a Harvard diploma, after all. Everybody knows that's good. And there are a number of answers to that. One is that everybody, as we know, is tested to death, so that anyone who comes out of a U.S. medical school has passed the USM, not only they've graduated, but they've passed objective tests. If they've specialized, they've passed objective tests. So we've set a high floor. And to tell me that, you know, it's only people from the East Coast Ivy League schools that really are high on that floor and everybody else isn't. And the flip side of it is, don't tell me about quality in a community that has no doctor when your institution has not addressed the problem. It is not quality to have nobody there. So it's an ongoing good discussion, but those are issues raised. These are just some commentaries. This is from Morehouse. This ranking goes to the very core of what Morehouse School of Medicine has stood for from the very beginning, building healthier America, focusing on communities with the biggest health challenges, Johns Hopkins. Certainly there's a role for Hopkins in innovating the area of primary care. It's not been an area of emphasis for Hopkins in the past, but an area where Hopkins can excel. And they do have an urban residency program, which I believe has two or maybe four folks a year, which is good, but it's in the range of fig leaf, I think, in other regards, if you get my drift. AAMC did not like the study, predictably. They first said it was flawed, and then they said, well, medical schools actually, when they got a backlash from the number of schools that had ranked well in their study who are AAMC members, they then said, well, it's medical schools are just too complicated to rank. We can't put them on a scale. Not a good conversation. So schools vary in what they do. They vary in their characteristics. Can change be made? Yes. And the answer is schools need to examine their mission and examine their outcomes and consider. Everybody won't change, but in this time of healthcare reform and reconsidering our system, one would hope, we hope, that schools would use this data or data they develop on their own to change. Now, quickly, the study underway, the question is, all right, some schools do well. What do they do? How do we measure what they do? How do we first characterize it, and how do we measure it? And that's the Beyond Flexner study, which is funded by the Kellogg Foundation. Most of the work on the previous was funded by the Macy Foundation. So Flexner was an important figure. You all know. Here is the gentleman. He basically standardized U.S. medical education by saying it ought to be embedded in a research university. And the majority of schools at the time were not. They were, as you probably know, fly by night, many of them. And the magic of Flexner, not magic, but the outcome that's quite extraordinary, is most of those collapsed. And those that were tied or became affiliated or embedded in research universities continued. And that did great things for quality of medical education, but it also built over the years in what now is called the Academic Medical Center, Academic Health Center, a certain quite restrictive set of characteristics in terms of a certain kind of intellect, highly technically oriented, a certain kind of a proclivity to be able to want to put up with that and follow that path, a certain kind of economic expectation, these are very expensive institutions, et cetera, et cetera. And some schools have escaped that. We have some variety at the margins of different schools, and we thought we ought to look at schools, both traditional and non-traditional, that were doing very well. So we have an advisory committee. We've in the process of six intensive site visits to six institutions. We've developed a set of modalities that we think are key. I'll show you those in a moment. So we have essentially a modality test. We are looking at the literature carefully about the evidence for those modalities. We will publish. We do have a website which is medicaleducationfutures.org. Don't hesitate to visit for this set of studies in general. And we anticipate a conference as well as the publications as an outcome. So these are the six schools, the University of Oklahoma School of Community Medicine, has been a two-year campus in Tulsa, now going to a four-year campus, very dedicated to the mission of community medicine. Morehouse, one of the winners, as we talked about, extraordinary school, quite focused. Its mission and social mission are synonymous. New school in Ontario, which is focused on rural, and indigenous health. Southern Illinois University, an example of a real bread and butter Central America, Central United States school. A.T. Still, an osteopathic school that does 1 year at in Mesa, Arizona. This is the Mesa campus of A.T. Still. And 3 years at community health centers. Then they then send students to local hospitals for the training. And finally, the University of New Mexico, again, a traditional Western school, but has been involved in every social mission activity that's come along the pike for 30 years. And the modalities we think that we're attempting to refine the discussion to instruments that schools use that they have that will help with the mission, with the social mission. So mission statement, a pipeline, or what do they do to stimulate to certain kinds of applicants? Who do they admit? What is the nature of their curriculum? Where are their clinical experiences? How broadly distributed are the students and their experiences? What do they do about tuition and debt? What sort of mentoring and modeling goes on within the institution, and how do they prepare students for selections for graduate medical education? that's underway. We hope to have it by next, be finished by this winter and our conference next spring. Finally, what is important about this work? The 20th century, we managed to move the American lifespan from 40 plus to 70 plus. 30 years life increase over a period of 100 years, about a year added every 3 years. That is amazing. And that American medical science takes great pride in that. Probably it is American public health that should take the greatest pride with a top off of clinical science. But together, and this reflects what's going on to some degree in all over the developing world, less so, of course, in the less developed world. And many people in this country sort of presume that the next 30 years or next 100 years will be another 30 years. So we'll be living to, 110. I think that's a hard argument to either make or defend. And if we do that, it's surely going to be with enormous expenditure and a certain kind of resource. And we could get into the argument or discussion of why that's a good idea or not, whether it's a plausible idea or not. I think it's neither plausible nor good, by the way. But another take on the 21st century is it's about solidifying the gains of the 20th century for everybody, because we know there are massive disparities within our society as others and between our society and the world. So a different mission for medicine and medical education might be the latter. I would commend that. I think our team and our studies are headed towards building the case for attending more to the latter mission than the former. Thank you.